Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 16 of Screen Champs. I'm your host, Dubs, here with my co-host, the Madman Moan.
What's going on, brother?
What's happening, man? We're doing it, man. 16 episodes in. I'm starting to, like, really look at the big picture. There's something that we talked about a long time ago. We talked about doing a movie podcast, like, maybe even a couple years ago. And a segment that I thought would be funny is, like, the road to Rotten Tomatoes. Like, us, like, trying to become, like, Rotten Tomatoes critics, trying to get our voice on there. Now, I thought it'd be funny. In my mind, I just imagine us emailing them, like, 100 times a day until finally someone was like, all right, dude, whatever, just write reviews. And I'm like, yes, but there's literally criteria and stuff for it. And one of the criteria for podcasts is that you have to be doing a podcast consistently for 2 years, and it's to release 4 episodes a month. We got some time to go, but I mean, hey, we're going to get there.
That's the road. Yeah, that's what we're doing, right? We're doing 4 episodes a month.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sometimes more.
Yeah, little fun episodes. Yo. Little, like, last minute, like, we need to tell you the news, emergency episodes. Mm,
all of it.
I mean, we're definitely hitting it. Oh, that's crazy, huh? So you need to apply pretty much to be a reviewer on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, they don't come find you. Well, I'm sure some people, like the Roger Eberts and stuff, you know, people that were there before Rotten Tomatoes, but everyone after, you know, all the idiots with an internet connection, you know, I feel like those people had to beg to get in there. So I'm ready to beg. 2 years in, I'm gonna be like, look, I got the receipts, bro. We've been doing this.
We print them all out. Like, you couldn't just email it to us. Like, no, I'm storming up to the Rotten Tomatoes office building. I have it printed for you, dude.
Yup.
All facts.
So let's see what's going on in the world. I feel like, and this really isn't in the world of movies, but it kind of got me and you specifically on a conversation that just kind of made us laugh. And now I feel like it's just because it made us laugh in the real world, we're just going to bring it here. Is Cam Newton and this kid started? Cam Newton, football player. Fell from grace, was on the Patriots for like 1 year, former MVP, and now, you know, he's still Cam Newton, but he is not performing the way people think he should or could. Some kid started yelling at him. It was like, hey, bro, you're unemployed. Like, you're unemployed. Is that what he was saying, right?
You say you're a free agent.
Yeah, you're a free agent.
You're a free agent.
You're poor. All that stuff.
You know, your ass. He said that too.
Damn. He called him an ass. Or he said, you are ass.
I guess he's playing.
and so he's just going in on this guy. Cam Newton handled it with as much grace as I feel like one could, besides literally just dropping to his knees and praying for him in that moment. He was super nice about it. He kind of baited him a little bit afterwards. But Cam Newton was a cool guy about it. Who wasn't cool was the internet. The internet went in on him. It's one of those things where it's not fair to have 3 million people yell at you, but it's fair that someone yelled at him. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, someone should have yelled at that kid because he was being dick, for sure. That makes sense. But to have the whole internet yell at you, well, then it's like, well, that's kind of mean. And he's just a kid, and since he's under 18, I think he's 17 years old. So it's rough. But then he put out the infamous Notes app apology, and that kind of just took us... I don't know, it took us down a path because we've seen these Notes app apologies all over the place. You know, they are how celebrities apologize. I did not know that real people were also allowed to apologize with the Notes app as well. It's a complete phenomenon now.
It's taken over. It's almost expected. It is expected. And maybe this kid, because it is a phenomenon, maybe that's all he knows. He felt like he needed to do that. He thought everyone was going to laugh with him and join him and say those bad things about Cam. But everyone was like, yo, put some respect on my mans. And he was like, oh, shoot. All right, well, let me go into Notes app. Let me type up my apology and let me tell them that hopefully I could be forgiven. Like, some 17-year-old kid. Yeah. And it was just hilarious because it's just the Notes app. Like, it's the Notes app apology. The Notes app apology. It's a thing now. People are just doing it.
Well, I mean, it's been a thing for a while. I guess it blew my mind that a civilian did it. But the other thing that's funny about it is how upset some people seem to be about not just the apology or what's being said, but literally the method of apologizing.
Yeah, it's almost like, what plays better, apologizing on the notepad or just putting up a little video? And it just seems like the notepad apology is the way to go.
Well, it's like, yeah, And so obviously I've seen celebrity apologies before, and I've seen the way, you know, they're just the text and screenshotted, but I just never really put it all together. But even when researching this right now, like, there was a New York Times article in 2019 that's called How We Apologize Now, talking about the iPhone Notes app. And then Vanity Fair wrote an article in June of 2020 saying it's the end of the iPhone Notes app apology era. And so this was like a whole world that I didn't even really realize that, like, people had names for it and it was talked about.
Articles?
Yeah, there's a New York Times article nonetheless.
New York Times article, How We, like, Apologize, Millennials.
Like. Crazy. But the best part about all that is that Vanity Fair was clearly wrong, because Justin Timberlake, he just dropped his most recently. We just talked about it. His Notes app apology. Chris Harrison, same thing. And now this 17-year-old kid who's yelling at Cam Newton, which, I mean, look, he was a jerk. I do feel bad for him because of the amount of backlash he got. But man, I just feel like when I was 17, I just wasn't yelling at celebrities. I just wouldn't have. So I just
wouldn't have at all. Yeah, other than just the kid asking for an autograph, being annoying. Be like, hey, like,
yeah,
I'm a huge fan of you. Can you autograph my t-shirt that I'm wearing? I know it's not your jersey, but like, someone needs to believe me. Someone needs to believe this. Or someone I really cared about. Let me get a signature on my like arm and I'll get that tattooed. Yeah. Be one of those.
Yeah. For everyone that's upset about the iPhone Notes apology, I'm a fan of it. I like it.
It makes sense.
Now, what the kid did is he literally just took a screenshot of his whole phone. You know, we saw how much battery life he had. We know the time he took the screenshot. Like, it was just a complete screenshot of his phone. Most people have the decency to, you know, crop the photo a little bit. Some people change the background color, you know, so there's things going on. But either way, it's clear that somehow this is a divisive issue that I didn't realize was a divisive issue until recently. That being said, I think we're going to take a stand. We're going to be iPhone app note defenders. I like this method of apology. If nothing else, because people get upset when they see it, that just makes me laugh. And I guess that's good enough for me.
It makes the most sense. You could fit so many words in a notepad post. You could fit so many characters, so many things. You could write a whole pretty much essay apology on it. Now, Justin Timberlake's, I don't know how that worked, where he did like two, like a part one and a part two, like notes apology. Maybe, you know, if we were to give someone tips, if they were planning on doing a notes pad apology, change the font size a little bit. Maybe don't do a lot of bold.
Yeah. Say that you're taking time to learn. You're listening. That you're listening.
Hopefully you could be forgiven.
Yeah.
You're sorry how your way of thinking took over what you did.
Mm. Not even the way society thinks enabled you to think that way, but now you know better.
Now you know better.
Damn society. You're always fucking with me. Yeah.
It's not my fault. It's society's fault.
Not just society, but
the woke police is out there.
You know, Chris Harrison's right. the woke police is out there. That's our.
They're out there.
We now have a soundboard with just one quote on it. I don't know. I don't know if the woke police is out there. We'll play, because we actually don't even like that he said that in the comment, but it just almost just makes us laugh as like a satire kind of thing. Hopefully the satire comes across. If not, you know.
Hopefully it hits. Hopefully it hits.
Yes. And, but if it doesn't play, we'll.
The woke police is out there.
Yeah. If it doesn't play, we'll know for sure, because.
The woke police is out there.
And that's all we got to say about it. We come to you guys in the wake of another celebrity apology. This one, I guess, tonally a little bit different, because the situation didn't happen recently, but the apology happened very recently. And as stand-up fans, we're definitely in tune with this one. Chris D'Elia released a 10-minute apology. This is the first time he spoke out in about 8 months, and he was accused of essentially, you know, reaching out to underage girls, kind of being an overall creep, and grooming, I guess, was one of the big things, where there were some younger girls that, although he didn't do anything with, he was kind of grooming them. But let's play you a clip of his YouTube apology right now.
I know that it's been a really long time since you've heard from me, and when the news broke, I put out a statement that said everything I've done has been legal and consensual, and that's true. And I wanted that statement to speak for itself. I know it looks bad, and it doesn't show the full scope of what happened. I stand by the fact that all my relationships have been consensual and legal, and that's just it. This was always about sex to me. And I do have a problem. It's not like you know, months down the line, you just kind of, everything's better. when I first started doing stand-up and I started getting a little bit of notoriety, you know, having sex got a lot easier is the, you know, for the lack of better words. And I felt lucky. I felt like, oh, wow, I don't need to work as hard. I can just do a show and then have sex or roll into a city and look at my inbox and then just start writing. And I did, man. I wrote, I mean, I know you've seen some of the messages online. I mean, there's way more than that. I would get 50, at least 50 messages after a show each city a night, and I would reply to all of them. And I thought in my mind that being straight up with these women was the right thing to do. I'd say, hey, come to my hotel room and let's have sex. Let's make out. Let's do this. Let's do that. And that was what I thought was right. It makes me feel shameful and it makes me feel bad. You know, people talk a lot about the power dynamic and about, well, why should someone who is a fan of yours have to worry about if you want to sleep with them or not? And I don't know where I fall on that. You know, especially in my early 30s, I would be like, well, the girl has the power because that's, you know, they I want to have sex with them. And if they want to have sex with me, then great. And I was talking to one of my friends and about the power dynamic and about the familiarity and not having to use that. And I said, why is that behavior not okay? Why is it not okay to sleep with somebody if it's consensual and they want to sleep with you? And he said, it's okay. Well, it is okay. It's okay until it's not. And that was when, you know, a lot of it clicked for me. I would think about it all the time. I would go and I would do my show. And I, you know, like I just said earlier, and I just, it was too much. And it became a lifestyle that I didn't know how to stop. I didn't even think I had a problem. I thought that this was how it was. I thought that guys in my position were lucky enough and fortunate enough, and it was going out of control. I never stopped it. I cheated on most of the girls that I've been with. I cheated on my fiance now. And this is my dream girl. This is the girl that I want to be with for the rest of my life. So I have a chance here to apologize to the people who got caught up in that shit. And I'm sorry. It's funny, the stuff that you tell yourself to make everything okay, you know, like the cheating and the sex every night or whatever. You know, well, any guy would do this, which is not true.
Madman, what do you think about Chris D'Elia's apology here?
I think that I might have had an overreaction when it first happened. I might have jumped the gun a little bit. I think I kept associating him with the characters he portrayed in Workaholics and You.
Okay, that's a bad. And so it's a bad look. Yeah,
I saw them. I saw him as that, and you know, I definitely think I did overreact it. I don't think that he is in the right though, because it's just kind of weird. It's still weird, with the underage thing.
Yeah,
it looks bad when he says it looks bad. I was like, it does. It does. Yeah, and I was kind of expecting like maybe a chuckle or like maybe a small joke or something after that, but it didn't really happen.
No,
because it's an apology, and you know, it is a genuine apology. I at least that's how I took it as. I mean, he pretty much almost cried. And so I took it as that. I do feel bad though because I did overreact. You know, when he says I thought I did everything correctly, I think he did. I don't know. I at first I overreacted for sure. I took him as a nasty, cruel like human being, and now I kind of understand a little bit more. But it's still. Like, in his words, it just doesn't look right.
It doesn't.
It just does it.
Yeah, it doesn't look great. I mean, it's funny. You know, he's an actor, and I guess he does have a weird look. In his stand-up, he's talked about the fact that he hasn't done, like, he's never drank and hasn't done drugs.
Yeah.
And how when you see him, because anyone that's seen Chris D'Elia would assume that he's done a ton of drugs, and he drinks all the time. He looks like a drug abuser, and I think that's kind of like what got him into this weird, oh, you play like kind of like the creepy pedophile guy, because he just kind of looks weird anyway. And so and so I think that's how he got those roles. I'm sure he wasn't seeking them out, like hitting up his agent, like, hey, if there's anything with like where I can play like a pedophile, that'd be super sick. Like, throw me a bone, please, every time. So I think he just kind of has a weird look anyway. It's one of those intangible things that it sucks to be in the situation if you got the weird look.
Yeah, he for sure does. I was in New Orleans, and then I was across the street from a Bank of America. And I thought I saw Chris D'Elia, but then, you know, he was like smoking a cigarette and drinking a beer and just looking like like a gross bum. And I was like, well, that's not Cristelia. That's just like a shady bum, like kind of guy, like druggy guy.
we could start a whole segment like, wait, is that Cristelia? It's just like a corpse. And it's like, oh, wait, no, never mind. That's just a dead person. Sorry.
Yeah.
I thought it was
my bad. Chris. I thought it was him. I was going to run up and ask for an autograph. I was like, no, that's not Cristelia.
Is that Cristelia? Like, no, it's just a Florida person. A shady, druggy guy. Yeah.
He's one of bat salts. Yeah. Nah, he's swimming from the mouth. That can't be him. He doesn't do drugs.
So, yeah. So, he's a good old Cristelia. I mean, his, you know, apology, you know, seems like a legit apology. You know, he's saying he's a sex addict. So be it, clearly. The other thing that's kind of a weird thing here is where some of these girls are 17, some of them are 16, is it's super weird that the age of consent is different in different states across the U.S. And it's even weirder, because we looked it up right before we did this podcast, that the majority of U.S. states, I think somewhere like 35 or 36, it's actually 16. And that only 11 states have the age of consent at 18.
Yeah.
So, I mean, hopefully my man is going around with like a color-coordinated map, you know, on his tour bus. Like, he's like, oh, we're going... We're going to Ohio? Like, sick, right?
Sick.
But it feels planning crazy.
Planning
his
tour that way? Maybe just planning cities? Like, he's going to hit? He's like, oh, okay, we're looking at 16 here? Yeah. All right. I might start off here and then end off here because of the age here. It's bad. That's not. I know that's not what it is. I hope it's not. But well, he was pretty honest with some of the stuff he was saying.
Yeah, but it's just, I don't know. It's just so weird that, like, from state to state, that could be, I don't know. And so that's like where, you know, you talk about things like grooming, which is kind of awkward. And he talks about using his influence. I mean, if he's up front with everyone, that's good. But it's just, man, the thought of like, oh, you're 17, but oh, okay, cool, we're in Colorado. And I don't know Colorado's stuff. But it's like, oh, we're in Colorado? Sick. Then we're good to go. Like, it's kind of, it feels icky. Like, it's like, bro, like it just... Just stop doing that.
Even like growing up, people would be like, oh, is she 18 though? Is she 18? Oh, she's 18. Well, that's go for it. Like, even then, like that was always weird to me. And then, like, I can't imagine someone like, hey, if she's 16, we're in Colorado. Like,
yeah.
If she's 16, brother, it all plays. Like, ugh, it's so gross.
So
it's hard, especially, I mean, he's like in his 40s now, right?
I think he just turned 40. I think he says that in the video. They just turned 40. The funny thing about the apology is the first comment is Theo Vaughn saying, I have that same shirt. And he does have that same shirt. There's like pictures comparing him, and that's like 28,000 likes. So shout out Theo Vaughn. Wow. He's always finding comedy.
Yeah, dude. That's good.
Lastly, what you were saying earlier, how you thought there was going to be a joke in there. It's so funny when you watch these comedians so often. I felt the same way. I was like, man, this guy's going to go off the rails or something. And in the context of what he did, nothing he said is funny. But when there's a comedian sitting up there being like, hey, man, I have a lot of sex. And I love having sex. And when I got famous, it was easier to have sex. I'm a stud. I'm that guy. And then like, okay, all right, Chris, we get it, dude. We get it. But he wasn't joking. He's just a sex addict, and that's a huge problem. But I was definitely expecting a punchline, like, loser, you wish, but no punchline. He just needs help. Hope you get the help, Chris. next up here, we got Spider-Man has a movie title, or it has four movie titles. Tom Holland is probably the sweetest kid and the biggest troll in the world, because he's constantly spoiled things for Marvel, who is notoriously tight-lipped. And now Marvel's using that in their favor and just having him put out crazy stuff. Matt, what was the title he put out for he said the movie was going to be called initially?
It was initially going to be called Spider-Man Phone Home.
It's crazy. It's like E.T. never existed. It'd be like Spider-Man, I am your father, you know, like Luke Skywalker type stuff. Like, there's no way. There's no way.
Yeah, and then Home has the little Spider-Man eyes on it. So,
well, yeah. Well, I think even in the actual title is No Way Home, but I think it still has the Spider-Man eyes.
Oh, there you go.
I think that was consistent the whole way. But
that was the trend, huh? That was the one that stuck.
Yes, yes, yes. But, you know, Zendaya and Jacob Batalon posted different titles. And that's just good old-fashioned trolling, that the internet loves it. It's so funny to see everyone pick it, because Tom Holland posted it first. Everyone picked it up quick. You know, it was like, breaking news, Spider-Man Phone Home. What? And then,
there are like a lot of GIFs of people just laughing. Is it GIFs or GIFs?
It's a GIF. Yeah, it's a GIF.
It's a GIF.
100%.
GIF. I said it right. Nailed it. yeah, everyone was laughing about it. People were making jokes about it. Spider-Man Home Alone, Spider-Man Home Alone 2, Spider-Man Home Improvement. that one made me chuckle a little bit. I mean, like the other dude, he put Home Wrecker.
There you go. That's hey. Hey. Don't hate it.
There's no way that was going to be the title. I was oh, okay, this is a joke. All right, now I get it. This is all a joke.
Yeah.
Whatever.
These three are so adorable. I couldn't stand them being canceled. If they came at him, don't tell me. If you got something on Tom Holland, I mean, unless he's a dangerous man, you know, let people know. But keep it to yourself, all right? No one needs to know. You know, Tom Holland, he's so nice.
Yeah, please don't tell me a story about you going to Starbucks and then you saw Tom Holland. He was buying something at Starbucks and you're like, oh my God, you're so cool. Like, I love you in Spider-Man. Can I get an autograph? And he said, no. And it was a little rude and he walked away. Don't say that. Don't disturb him. A man's getting to Starbucks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we have to protect Tom Holland and his spider friends at all costs. Because
the woke police is out there.
The woke police is out there. And we can't, they're out there, we can't have this. We can't have it at all.
Cannot have this. Cannot. Please don't cancel Tom Holland.
Yeah. Thank you, Chris Harrison, for your kind words. All right. Next, we got the Paramount Plus news. What once started as, I feel like, a punchline, even when we're talking about the Super Bowl and like how many times we see ads for this.
Oh, yeah.
Now it might have just become my favorite streaming service. I'm so excited for everything dropping on Paramount Plus.
Absolutely.
Formerly CBS All Access. If you have CBS All Access right now, you will have Paramount Plus. I think March 4th is when it turns over. So just keep paying for it. Great things are coming. There's a thousand things. Like how we did our little Disney episode. We could have done an episode on everything Paramount Plus is dropping. We're not going to. We're going to tell you guys about some of the favorite things that we saw that stood out to us. And most importantly, they're showing a lot of love to MTV, the MTV that I grew up with, the MTV you grew up with.
Yes.
And some of these huge reality shows are coming back. So we got a Challenge All-Star Season, also known as Challenge OGs. We got the Real World Reunion. So it's the first season. All the people that were in the first season of the Real World 30 years ago are coming back. Crazy. And Road Rules, the competition show, is coming back as well. All Paramount Plus exclusives.
Wild.
Wow. I'm so excited for all this.
That's going to be intense. Challenge All-Star Season. That sounds a lot of fun. Yeah, and this Road Rules returns? Like, Road Rules? What, like, that's coming back?
Oh,
that's dope, dude. That's freaking dope. Real World and Road Rules. They're bringing it back.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I can't wait till those cast members end up being on the challenge.
Exactly.
Maybe not the Real World people because they're a little bit older. But I mean, like, yeah, let's bring some new people in.
Well, I think if this season garners some attention, I don't see why they won't just kind of bring the process back and have the Real World again.
Do revivals.
I can't wait.
Austin, Real World Austin.
Because
I've got OG cast.
Well, yeah, no, I want new casts. I don't want OGs anymore. I want new casts. I want, like, fresh so they can go on the challenge. Like you said, I want all new people. And just keep running it back. I mean, they had, like, 27 seasons before, or more, I think. It's one of the longest-running reality shows.
Yeah.
Give me all that. And starting Road Rules again. So the challenge literally started as the Real World Road Rules Challenge. Like, who's strong, you know, the Real World, soft Real World people out drinking, or the Road Rules people who are, like, roughing it in an RV and also drinking. Who's got it? It's almost like MTV is restarting, like, finally. But it sucks. They're Paramount Plus exclusives, which means that ridiculousness can still be the only thing that airs on MTV. Ugh. Like, none of this is going to take any time from ridiculousness.
I hate that so much. Yeah. Just give me some, like, new or old, you know, Real World, Road Rules episodes and just put that on a block rather than having, like, 16 hours on ridiculousness. And maybe it's because I'm fasting right now. I'm doing that 16 and 8 fast. Uh-huh. I feel like MTV is doing the same. Like, it's just 16 hours of ridiculousness and then 8 hours of whatever the programming they have.
It's pretty generous on that 8 hour. I think it's more like 22 hours of ridiculousness. And like someone forgets to schedule it and they accidentally show something else. It's crazy.
Saturday and Sunday is just all ridiculousness. It's just what it is.
Which sucks, man, because that means there's some kids out there who are never going to have the opportunity to like watch a season of The Real World on a Saturday by accident.
Yeah.
Just because they just happened to be sitting there and it came on. Because that happened to me. It's great, great memories. Besides that, MTV is also bringing back some pretty prolific music series. So Behind the Music, which is actually a VH1 thing, but Behind the Music, Unplugged, and Yo MTV Raps, all coming back.
Yeah, I'm pumped, dude. Especially Unplugged. One of my favorite like DVDs that I had to rebuy when it's Dashboard Confessional Unplugged. Probably one of the best best shows I've ever seen, man. I'm so jealous of all the people that were there. Me and my friends in high school, we would just listen to that on a loop and just scream our little hearts out. But it's fun. It's so fun. It just makes it so personal, you know, like so it's a close, like small little studio. It's only like not a whole bunch of people. It's just a small select people, and the audience all gets involved. And I love that, man. I love that so much. And Yo MTV Raps, that's going to be funny. Hopefully they have some good hosts, I guess.
Yeah.
But that's going to be funny. It's going to be rad. It's going to keep me posted. I mean, it is behind a paywall because of Paramount Plus.
Yeah. Look, man. This is the way of the world. It's the way of the world. Things are just going that way. Because who's going to have cable anymore? Who's going to have cable anymore?
That's true.
At this point. Yeah,
that's true.
The other thing that Paramount Plus is going to have that's actually kind of cool is like the NFL games. So like Sunday CBS games are going to stream through there. So once ABC Plus comes out or whatever and Fox Plus... So, yeah, we're going to have to pay like $5 for each, but it's going to be a lot of content.
It all work.
It's all going to work out. And the other thing with these streaming services is there is a lot of like sharing, a lot of like, hey, you pay half, I'll pay half. And they're kind of making it so that you can do that. I mean, I'm not complaining. Honestly, when I really look at what I'm paying for streaming and what other people like shared logins, things like that, it could be worse. I have access to a lot of content. It could be a lot worse. see, a couple other things. They're coming up. Well, the new Rugrats, which they're advertising a lot because it has the same voice cast, but it looks scary as shit. So I don't know. I saw an ad for that. I don't know, man.
Nightmare fuel, bro.
Yeah,
it is. It is pretty scary.
Yeah, I didn't like what I saw at all. I was just like, man, this is well. Hopefully the kids like it. I mean, it's definitely a kids show. Totally understand that. But oh my gosh, parents are gonna walk by and be like, what the hell, like demon shit is this? It's not good. We got Reno 911 special, always down for Reno 911, and a Workaholics movie in the works. Plot twist, fun facts, Chris D'Elia played a pedophile in a Workaholics episode, so call back.
Yeah, we're going to report this right now. Screen Champs first reporting Chris D'Elia would not be in the Workaholics movie. That's a for sure thing.
Yeah, 100%.
Now you know.
Now you know.
The woke police is out there.
They're not going to let it happen. All right.
Thank you, Chris Harrison.
Yeah. Thank you. Chris Harrison always reporting for us. Lastly, they're calling this a big splash. When I see 45 days, to me, that just feels like an eternity when I read it. But Quiet Place 2 and Mission Impossible 7 are going to stream on Paramount Plus 45 days after they premiere in theaters. So that's kind of a big deal. Now, it's just those two movies. It's not all Paramount movies. Every movie seems like it's going to be different. Some are going to rental. Some are going to Epix. Some are going here.
Yeah, I mean, is that going to be the trend? You think you're going to see that more and more now?
Oh, definitely. HBO Max upped their subscribers so much with the Warner Brothers deal they got going on. It's another way to leverage it. Yeah. Why not? And next up here, we got Army of the Dead trailer. This is a trailer that I was super stoked to see.
Oh, yeah.
I would say my expectations were through the roof. It did not hit those expectations, but it's just because I didn't see enough, I think. This is a Netflix movie coming out in May. We kind of covered it when we did our Netflix drop. And the synopsis here, if you guys are unaware, it's following a zombie outbreak in Las Vegas. A group of mercenaries take the ultimate gamble, venturing into the quarantine zone to pull off the greatest heist ever attempted. Madman, what'd you think of this teaser they put out?
It's a 1 minute little teaser trailer. I want to see more, but they did give me what I wanted to see. Which is like Vegas, and there's a zombified Elvis. Like, there's a zombie movie in Vegas. You have to see a zombified Elvis.
Yeah.
Like, it just, that's for sure has to happen. So I was pumped with that, and it's got my boy Dave Bautista, man. That's my guy, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be wild. It's going to be wild. It kind of like Mortal Kombat. Like, it could be bad, but zombie movies are always fun. You know, like, they're always fun. Like, guns and blowing zombie brains heads off, and I'm sure there's going to be someone in the movie's going to say, like, hey, make sure you shoot them in the head. They die quicker. Like, something like that. Like, it's fun. It seems like it's going to be fun. What's the heist, though? What are they doing? Like, what are they... trying to grab, like, well, just a bunch of money?
Yeah, I'm assuming, intense. Like, some at some casino, maybe a bank somewhere. I don't know. There is a part, well, spoilers from the teaser trailer, but they do get to the money. I don't know if they get away with the money, but there's definitely the clip of them opening it, and there's just money everywhere in this big vault. So, we have Dawn of the Dead from Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
Great movie. I think most people, if you like zombie movies, you like the 2004 Dawn of the Dead. It's a ton of fun. This one is rated R for strong bloody violence, gore and language throughout, some sexual content, and brief nudity/graphic nudity. I mean, that's what we're here for. That's what you want. When you're going to a movie like this, you want strong, bloody violence. So I'm excited for that. And I'm excited for how excited Zack Snyder is about it. One of the quotes he had was, "There are no handcuffs on me at all with this one. It will be the most kick-ass, self-aware, but not in a weak-to-the-camera way, balls-to-the-wall zombie freak show that anyone has ever seen. No one's ever let me completely loose like this." I'm there.
Wow.
I'm there. I need a Red Band R-rated trailer. I'm surprised Netflix didn't put out, considering how violent this is going to be. I'm surprised we didn't get a Red Band trailer for this movie.
That's definitely exciting, because you see time and time when directors want to do their own thing. They want to be themselves in these movies. And sometimes like the studios have too much involvement and they kind of tone it down and they kind of remove some of the stuff they want to do. It's dope that Zack Snyder is going to be able to do whatever he wants to do, because we've seen him do some nutty, crazy stuff.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I just keep thinking about like Smoke and Aces, and I feel like it's going to be like a lot of fun. Like that's become like kind of like a culty, like a cult, you know, fan favorite type movie. And so this might be one of those, you know, where it's just a cult, you know, fan favorite film, and Zack Snyder just doing Zack Snyder shit. You know, like it's going to be, it is going to be rad. And there's a prequel, right? They're already doing a prequel. It seems like they believe in this.
The prequel is already finished shooting. It's in post-production. They actually finished in December. And I guess it was filmed in Germany. Probably doesn't take place in Germany. And then they have like an animated series coming out that is expanding the universe too. So they've bought in heavy already. And there's a part of me that thinks that maybe Netflix is pushing this quote because HBO just spent $70 million remaking Justice League, so they don't want anyone to think that this is not Zack Snyder's final vision. He's like, "Do you guys have any notes?" And they're like, no, seriously, no notes. We have nothing to tell you. We want you to do exactly what you want to do, and please tell everyone on Earth that that's exactly what's happening, so that we don't have to remake this movie. All right, thank you. All right, and next up, we have a pretty tonally different movie. We got the Disney Pixar Luca trailer that just dropped. It's coming out June 18th, 2021. The synopsis here is it's set in the beautiful seaside town on the Italian Riviera. This original animated feature is a coming-of-age story about one young boy experiencing an unforgettable summer filled with gelato, pasta, and endless scooter rides. Luca shares these adventures with his newfound best friend, but all the fun is threatened by a deeply held secret. He is a sea monster from another world just below the water's surface. Dun, dun, dun. Man, what'd you think of this trailer?
Looks rad. It's like Italian, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm pumped. I have a fascination with food in like cartoon movies and how good it looks.
Okay.
So, I'm expecting a lot of good like Italian food eating.
Yeah. Gelato pasta. Yeah.
Pasta. Maybe some raviolis in there. But no, it's going to be fun. It just trips me out that so he's a monster, right? He's a sea monster.
He's like a gremlin, right? So if he gets wet, he turns into a mermaid. if he's dry, he's just a kid, just a guy.
How do you explain that? It's a rainy day. Oh my God, kill him. Yeah,
does it rain a lot in Italy? Damn, I didn't think about that. Imagine like you forget your umbrella and he's like, "This is awkward." He just starts swimming through the streets. Yeah, that's rough,
dude. Yeah, I'd be scared. I mean, I'd be frightened.
Like, yes. I would. Yeah, people structurally changed. Yeah, oh yeah, I'd be terrified.
Yeah, dude. So, I mean, if it goes dark, I mean, there's ways, but no, I think it's going to be fine. You know, it's a coming of age story, and I love coming of age story, so give it to me. I feel like Pixar always does great. They never do wrong, seems like.
Yeah, I would say a testament to their quality is the fact that we're even talking about it, just in the sense that we don't normally cover kids' trailers when they come out, but if it's a Disney Pixar movie, you can't ignore that. And never mind the fact that Soul was in both of our top tens this past year.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of talk about this movie. A lot of people comparing it to Call Me By Your Name. Have you seen that at all?
Man, this is going to break people's hearts. I bought the DVD because Sujin Stevens, he does the music for that movie. And I really liked the song that he did for it. So I bought the DVD. I was like at a Target. You know, Target runs. You're at Target. You're like, maybe I do need this DVD. So I bought it.
Yeah.
Had plans to watch it. I have not seen the movie. And I still have it. It's collecting dust.
Okay. Okay. So then you wouldn't have made the distinction. So a lot of this synopsis, until you get to the sea monster part, kind of matches the Call Me By Your Name synopsis. Like a young boy, an unforgettable summer, endless scooter rides. Lucas shares these adventures with his newfound best friend, but all the fun in the world is threatened by a deeply held secret. And then for Call Me By Your Name and be like, that he's gay. You know, that would be the change, right? In this one, he happens to be a sea monster. So there's a lot of people saying there's a lot of subtext to like a relationship between these two guys. I thought maybe, you know, I was like, oh, maybe it's a thing. A lot of people online are saying that, but they're two kids, man. I think they're just kids.
And Call Me By Your Name, I'm aware with the storyline. Like, I know what happens. And that's why I was confused when you were like comparing them, but it makes sense. It makes sense. It seems like it's the right, it's the right comp. Hopefully Sujin Stevens does a song in that movie too. It'd be dope.
So then I was thinking, okay, because look, animators push agendas all the time. You know, there's a thousand things, especially in old Disney movies and the weird little moments where it's like an adult snuck it into the kids movie and this and that. Yeah. So
like the cloud say sex or something.
Yeah. And subliminal stuff and subtext. Totally understand that. I totally believe it's real. And then I read the director talking about this movie and he was saying he grew up in Italy, you know, on the beaches, kind of living that life that we're seeing in this trailer. And he meets this kid who's 11 years old, kind of a rambunctious type of kid that didn't really match his personality. But he said it helped him grow up and break out of his shell a little bit. And I was like, well, that's beautiful, man. You know, that doesn't have to be a gay story. I mean, it could be, but it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, yeah. And shout out that was a good friend and not like 13, where like it's a friend that just, you know, makes you repeat school and gets you doing drugs and stuff.
Well, it's all about where it's being made. So this guy happened to work at Pixar, so that's what it is. If he worked at A24, I'm sure this movie would be rated R, and it would be completely different.
Yeah. Maybe some mistreatment of the children.
You know,
Oh, that's funny.
But then at the same time, he also wasn't a sea monster when he was a kid. So, you know, hey, maybe it is.
He was like, and the reason why he's a sea monster is because they used to call my best friend Monstro, you know, like, because he looked like one. Like, he just it was not a good looking kid, you know, but he was my friend and we grew.
I love it.
People are the worst.
People are the worst, you know, but now I just don't want to be like wrong, you know. I don't want to be like, I don't want to be the guy that doesn't understand that they're really gay, but I don't want to be the guy that's like, they're definitely gay and it's just too, like, oh, now a kid can't have a friend anymore, they got to be gay. I don't know. I just want to know what's right, that's all.
Yeah.
All right, and let's hop into our review here. We got Nomadland. This is a critical darling with a 94% fresh score on Rotten Tomatoes and an audience score of 78%. This movie is directed by Chloe Zhao and it is starring Frances McDormand and it is streaming on Hulu. The synopsis here is, after losing everything in the Great Recession, a woman played by Frances McDormand embarks on a journey through the American West, living as a van-dwelling modern-day nomad. This is a movie that, due to the pandemic, I think kind of got lost in the shuffle in a lot of ways, but this is something that the critics have been raving about for quite a while. I think ever since we've been doing this podcast, I've been hearing about Nomadland. A lot of people had it in their top movies of 2020. I think the Madman and I are putting this as a 2021 movie because that's when we were able to get access to it. But Nomadland, the classic slow burn. It kind of almost feels like it's not even a movie. It feels like maybe a documentary / movie. Madman, what are your thoughts on Nomadland here?
I enjoyed it. I think I generally like slow burns more than you. I enjoyed it. I mean, I think you're definitely right with it feeling more like a documentary than an actual movie. Mm-hmm. That's how it felt. Shout out to Chloe. I know she casted some unknown actors, some real life nomads.
Yeah.
That kind of gave it that authentic feel. But there was a lot of dialogue from the unknown actors, you know, the real nomads, the real people, kind of sharing their stories, which is beautiful. It was nice. But it's, you know, it is something that I felt like I have already seen before, like on Vice or Humans of New York, things like that, where people are just kind of sharing their struggles. And, you know, there's a beauty behind it. There's something nice. Just seeing that kind of play out. Mm. But it definitely felt that way. It didn't really feel like a movie. The fact that it's on Hulu and I'm able to like be in my bed watching it, it definitely made me appreciate my life a little bit more. Oh, yeah. But it also made me feel like, hey, maybe I should go out today, or maybe I should go take a hike. Maybe I should go explore the world. But I mean, generally, I pretty much enjoyed it. I thought it was a good watch.
I think I would kind of land actually pretty close to that. I don't know if I'd even go so far as to recommend it necessarily. I think one of the most impressive things that this movie does, though, is it makes the non-actors, of which there are many, even like you said, the people who kind of have a prevalent speaking voice in the movie, probably give some of the most, you know, electric scenes. The most exciting scenes are definitely scenes where actual nomad people that the author of the book this is based on met out in the world. Mm-hmm. To make those people feel genuine in a movie, I think is probably the best thing that it's done. Because actors are actors for a reason. And it's not necessarily the easiest thing to do. And anyone that has acted in any kind of production, however high scale or low scale it is, can attest to the fact that if you have zero training whatsoever, it can be extremely awkward, extremely weird, and it's hard to act. So the fact that she was able to get this kind of performance out of people and make it seem like a documentary, make it seem real, like a slice of life, I think that's a huge testament to what Chloe Zhao could bring to the table.
You know what's funny, too? The fact that I think these nomads are comfortable in their own skin. They're comfortable mm-hmm. being who they are.
Oh.
Frances McDormand, like the director, would tell her, like, you know, like, hey, you know what, Swanky, like, you did great. Frances, tone it down a bit. You know, act less.
I love that. Act less. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I thought was funny. Like, just in the feel of it. Where she had to kind of even tone it down a little bit to make herself seem a little bit more believable in here. I know the production, they stayed in like vans. They stayed in mm-hmm. these certain situations that like these nomads were, you know, they are staying. Like that's how they are living. They are living in their vans. They are living in campers. They are living in their cars. Yeah. So put herself into that feel. Frances McDormand did say that, you know, for her, it was better to act like she was exhausted than to actually be exhausted because it is draining, I'm sure, being and uncomfortable being in some of these situations that these nomads are in, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. That's cool that they stayed. I didn't know they stayed in vans and stuff like that. That's kind of interesting. There's a lot about this movie that just kind of feels like a documentary. It really does. And I think maybe a documentary might have almost been more interesting. Because even when you have a documentary, there's usually like a mission statement or some kind of point. I think the mission statement here was just to kind of show a slice of life. And you can look deeper into it and maybe say it's about, you know, Frances McDormand's character and her trying to deal with grief and how anyone deals with grief. And a lot of people share their trials and tribulations throughout the movie. But it feels like a slice of life. And I think that's such a huge compliment. It really feels like a slice of life. That being said, there's a reason that a slice of life can also kind of be boring, too. That's where, as a piece of entertainment, this movie falls a little flat. It's not nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be, in the sense that I thought I was going to be bored out of my mind. I was not bored out of my mind. I wasn't. I was, but
there's like a few ups and downs with like just the nomads and their way of living.
Yeah.
How one day you could be part of this little troop and have this fire going and just be amongst people and everyone's sharing stuff and eating. And then the next day it could just be you alone in that desert.
Yeah.
It happens like quite a few times where there's certain moments where you see like, oh wow, that's actually pretty fun. I enjoy it. You know, it looks like Coachella. Right. And then like the next day it's like, oh no, this is, I mean, it's definitely not. It's just, it's not like a fun camping trip. It's the way of living. It's how you live. So it is interesting seeing the odd jobs that Frances McDormand did, Fern, you know, in the movie. All the different, I mean, it starts with her like pretty much in Amazon and then doing other things. She's working at like a rock store or something. And then she's working at like a reservoir or something. And then she's working with potatoes or beets or like doing this weird thing.
Restaurant,
Yeah, and then Frances McDormand herself, and like she worked some of those jobs of like for the movie, like get herself into the character. So it was very believable. Fern was just handling it, but that's, you know, a big issue that some of the people had with like the book is that the book really shows how kind of shitty it is. You're not really that supported, and some of the working conditions are very dangerous, where you could get hurt. You know, like at Amazon, there's stories about people getting hurt. You know, there's stories about people getting injuries Linda May, who plays Linda in the movie, sweet little old lady, mm-hmm. a real life nomad. She got an injury from just scanning so much using the little scanning machine from Amazon. And this movie doesn't show any of that.
No.
It shows them being happy at work.
Having a good old time. Like, hey, yeah. Come sit with us at lunch. We're having fun.
Yeah. Shows a lot of that. So a lot of people kind of like are upset that that was omitted, like from, you know, in the movie. Because it's prominent in the book. They talk about it a lot. But Chloe here, though, I don't think that was her intention. Her intention was really to focus on the emotions, focus on the storytelling as well, and maybe try not to make it political.
Yeah, well, it makes so much sense just in the sense that I feel like I've known a bunch of 20-year-olds who have worked in an Amazon warehouse and say it's, like, super difficult and really hard and really tiring. So you substitute that with a bunch of 60-year-olds, and if they haven't been working out their whole life, I could see that being pretty rough.
Dude, and that's the thing, that they love 60-year-old retirees. They love the older people because they'll show up on work on time. They'll come into work. They'll work hard.
Bootstrap.
They're still tired. Yeah, they're so tired, they're not going to, like, socialize after work or, like, just kick it. They're going to go straight to their van or home or whatever. And these guys are seasonal, right? They're only seasonal, so they're not sticking around long enough to get benefits or get, you know, extra things, you know, raises, things like that. Like, none of that. They're just coming in, doing some dirty work, and just dipping. And so that the movie doesn't show that. I wish it would have showed a little bit more of a struggle, even with just Fern's character. There are some unfortunate things that do happen in the movie, but I wish that, you know, there just would have been a little bit more struggle, because I know real life nomads, they go through some struggles. They go through some tough situations that they have to really handle. And it seems like Fern in this movie always kind of had a way out, or always had someone that she could rely on, or have someone to help her out.
Like I said, it felt like a slice of life. I mean, I guess kudos to them for not manufacturing any excitement and just kind of letting the story kind of be what it is. But I would say that this movie, it reminds me a lot of just like a book of really pretty pictures, you know, and really nice moments, like or nice poems and nice quotes and kind of something different that you look at and it's almost like an escape for a second. And you think, wow, you know, this is really interesting. This could be cool. And these people have lived such a unique life. And, you know, that's amazing how cool that this exists. but also, like, what else am I going to watch on Hulu today? I don't know. Like, probably I don't see myself going back to Nomadland anytime soon. Even though I, as someone who has romanticized living in his car for whatever reason, I just hate paying rent. And I'm like, man, wouldn't it be nice? Because I have to pay for a car.
Wouldn't it be dope just to collect my check and just have it?
Yeah. Like, man, I would love to not pay for rent. This is amazing. And then I watched this movie and I was like, you know what? You know, rent's not that bad after all. I like having a toilet, things like that. Super sick. So.
Oh, that toilet scene. That's like Oscar-worthy scene right there, bro.
Yikes. I mean, maybe Oscar the Grouch. Boom. I don't know. I didn't love that. No, just kidding. No, when I watched it, I thought, ugh. Well, I'm glad I don't have to do that.
Yeah, I mean, people have compared this movie to, like, Into the Wild. But people say Into the Wild had a way better soundtrack. You know, like, something like that. Like, the Florida Project when it comes to, like, poverty. I could see all that a little bit. You just hit it out of the park with it being kind of just a slice of life. I still enjoyed, like, kind of all the good things that kind of happened, all the camaraderie that seems to be in this community, kind of just appreciating the little things, just appreciating life. There's a scene where that dude, David or Dave, he freaking grabs the box, helping her out, and then all her plates fall down and break.
Yeah. Super.
And
awkward.
She's just like, go over there, go over there. Yeah. And then it goes to her, like, crazy gluing a plate that her dad had given her. And, you know, early in the movie, she kind of talks about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a nice little prized possession where, you know, there's certain, you know, has that happened to you in your life where there's been something that you really care about and it breaks or you lose it and it just, it makes you so sad?
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely happened before. I mean, I've definitely lost things that I wish I still had.
I feel like I dropped a lot of things that I liked and they've broken. There was I had this special, like, I think it was like a Winnie the Pooh, like, coin collector, like a little bank, right, that you buy.
Mm-hmm.
And in the bottom, it has the little top, so you could just take it out and you could just empty all your money or your bills. I dropped that. Ooh. And it broke my heart.
Yeah, well, it sucks.
And what makes it even sadder is that it was really only like $2-3 in there. Like, it was still. It's not like it was full of money where it breaks and you're like, hey, well, at least I've got like 100 and some bucks.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like $3. It was a lot of pennies.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, when we talk about how we're going to rate this movie, there is something that we need to introduce as well. I think we're going to start doing these three-word reviews along with our rating. That's something that was trending on Twitter recently and ended up being kind of funny. And we're like, you know what? We can incorporate that with our review. So along with us scoring it, we're going to give you guys a three-word review for every movie that we review from here on out, unless we decide we don't want to, and then we won't do that. Newman, how do you want to rate this? By buckets or...
Buckets, you can do buckets, you can do white box vans, you can do yeah. Let's do buckets. I like buckets.
Yeah, bucket's solid. Yeah. It fits with the theme.
So again, with the authenticity of this movie, with just the real life nomads being there, you gotta show some love for Swanky. Was my girl. Had a great scene, noteworthy scene. Linda May, Bob Wells, who you could see his videos on YouTube, he gives tips on how to live in your car, essentially, how to live low cost, all authentic, all people that were in the book that it's based on. And just Frances McDormand, she does a good job kind of just with her emotions, just showing you what she's going through and still being optimistic, still being strong and positive and just finding love and enjoying life and trying to get rid of some. Maybe some stuff in her life. I'm going to rate this one an 88. Nice. I think it might make my top 10 at the end of the year.
So 88. All right. That's solid. I'm going to give this one 72 buckets out of 100.
Okay.
I think that there's a lot going on. I definitely was not upset with the movie. I thought I was going to be bored by it. Wasn't necessarily bored, but it's also not super exciting. But I think there's an interesting character. There's interesting characters, and to kind of share that life with them for a little bit is still worth the ride overall. Yeah. That's where I'm at. And so, three-word review. Hit us with your three-word.
Three-word review. I'm pumped. I'm going to go a little bit wholesome here. I'm going to go with Home is Yours. And okay. That's my three-word review.
My three-word review, no final goodbyes.
Ooh, no final goodbyes.
That's where we're at.
Ooh. Damn, I wanted to say something like "see you down the road," but that's not a freaking. That's more than three words.
Yeah, well, we figure out contractions and stuff.
Yours is better though. Yours is good.
See you later.
No final goodbyes.
No final.
Oh, that was a strong scene when that was said too.
Yeah, yeah.
Oof, there's definitely some teary moments in this movie too.
Alternative three word review: shitting in buckets. So that's the other one that could
be. Hey, when you got to go, you got to go. Hey, there you go. And there's a scene, too. It's like, you have a 2-foot bucket or a 7-foot bucket? Like,
yeah. Got bad knees? You know, get this. It's like, I live in a small car. I got a 2-gallon. All right. Well, thank you to everyone for listening. I think it kind of wraps up our episode.
The woke police is out there.
Never forget the woke police is out there.
Never forget.
I really want to expand our soundboard. I don't know. When I say soundboard, I just mean the recording app on my phone. Either way, we had some fun with that today. So maybe we can keep including that just as a little goof. But we'll catch you guys next week. Peace out.
Thank you for your service, Chris Harrison.
Hey, guys, that sounded great. Can we get everyone to reset? All right, take two.